This is the 12 Songs of Christmas, today with Kristen Chambers and Mars Williams. My name is Alex Rawls, and the 12 Songs of Christmas is part of my effort to get a handle on Christmas music, something I've collected for more than 20 years. I like the songs as songs, but the odd space they inhabit in our culture and in artists' careers intrigues me. I'm talking to musicians to try to work through some of these ideas. Today I'm talking to Seattle singer-songwriter Kristen Chambers. Kristen, thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me, Alex.
So, yeah, check me if I got this right. I was counting off your website here. So Kristen's released two albums and three EPs, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Good. Yep.
All right. Math has not failed me. No. All right. And in that collection, you have one album of Christmas music, Snow Globe, and an EP of Christmas music, Merry Christmas, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And I've been seeing that you also have been releasing music regularly new music to SoundCloud, correct?
Yes. So I have a SoundCloud page that's dedicated to a song writing group that I'm a part of, where it's an online group, and we're given a theme a week to write to. And so basically you'll get the word or the theme on Sunday, and the goal is to write a song to that, inspired by that, and also record it. I have a home studio here, and get that song up by within a week, within 7 days. And then as a group, we sort of listen to each other's songs, and it's really interesting to hear the different ideas that come out of that, because we're all very different. And this is an international group. So the SoundCloud page that I have out there is pretty eclectic. It's got some demos from that. It's got, it does have Snow Globe on there as well. So that group is basically about flexing that songwriter muscle. And there's probably about, I want to say about 10 of those that I'm circling back that I really, really love, and am working currently on a full length album for next year of non-Christmas music.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
oh, that's great. So how did Christmas music come to occupy sort of such a large part of your body of work?
You know, I think that is sort of almost happenstance. I do love Christmas. I love the holidays. It sort of started with me. I'm trying to think of the first one that I wrote. I wrote Frozen Heart or It's Not Christmas Without You Here, sort of on a whim. And I really loved it. And then I wrote another one and I thought, hey, why don't I, you know, tackle this? And I mean, as you might hear in other interviews, I think Christmas can be a tricky one to write about. So I felt like I had a couple, and I continued in that direction. And so Snow Globe was born, the idea. And I thought, well, hey, I had a couple of albums already out, and this record is in its fourth year. And I have really fond memories of making it. And I've turned it into an annual show here in Seattle. It's in its fourth year. And so it's just a really, it's a really special project to me. It does take up a little chunk of my time there from about October 31st on these days.
Well, tell you what, let's hear a moment, a little bit of Frozen Heart, and then we'll come back and talk some more about it.
Okay.
The bells are ringing,
So
there's Frozen Heart.
Yep.
Aptly titled.
So what you said that writing Christmas songs is a challenge. How so?
I think for me, I should say that for me, I'm trying to write songs. It's hard to cover territory that was covered so much, you know, like love or and Christmas. And I want to always try and write a little differently if I can. It's and so that is where the difficulty lies. And I think what I really love about Frozen Heart is that it's exploring the other side of Christmas. I think so many people experience it can be melancholy for people because it's a time when we're all there's so much joy around you and merrymaking. And I think it can. So I wanted to write about the lonelier side of it in that song. So, yeah, and I think so writing about the joy side can be even trickier, right? In the sense that you want to try and be a little, you know, look at a different, look through a different lens, you know, than Jingle Bells or something. So,
sure.
Yeah.
Here's the question I always kind of come back to is sort of how is writing a Christmas song different from writing a love song?
Oh, gosh. Well, that's a good question.
I'll tell you why I asked that question. Give it so you can also. It sounds like okay. You can use a moment to think.
That
you know, people complain that you know, critics of Christmas music, people who don't like it, complain that it's such a limited subject matter.
Yeah,
but you know, no one says love songs are a limited subject matter.
Mm.
And so, is it? Yeah, so I always kind of wonder, is it a problem of the subject matter when people say I'm tired of hearing, you know, all these songs, or they're just tired of hearing the same songs? Like I wonder if you could only hear the same 150 love songs, would people think love songs suck? Is it a function of we hear these songs too much that you know, radio stations, et cetera, end up playing the same stuff over and over again and just crushing the fun out of it? Or is there something specific in Christmas that makes it hard to write about in a way, and that makes it different from rustling your way through a love song?
Right. Maybe you're hitting on the thing there. So I was just talking about writing love songs with a friend of mine, who's also a writer, and we were talking about how it's much easier to write a love song that has conflict in it. And so I was sort of saying, wow, I'd like to maybe write some real, you know, straightforward, I love you love songs, because a lot of mine have the conflict and then the resolution, or I love you, you love me despite kind of thing. So I think it's hard to write just a straightforward, I love you love song. Does that make sense? So,
sure.
You know, in the whole scope of love, we could write thousands of different, scenarios. And I tend to gravitate towards the ones that are, it's easier to write about the ones with conflict. So for me, and I think similarly about Christmas. So when I say it's difficult to write about Christmas, I think it's because maybe there's some, a little bit of pressure there to write about the twinkling and the lights and the beautiful snow. And so it's more fun to write the two that I brought up, actually. That's interesting is that they have the conflict involved. It's not Christmas without you here.
Right.
And Frozen Heart. So maybe it's just mostly tricky to write the next Jingle Bells.
Yes.
And do we want that? Right? I'm sure there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of great, like Joni Mitchell's River, beautiful Christmas song. But is that what everybody wants on their playlist when they're popping the turkey in? Not sure, because it's sad.
Yeah. I think that these are all questions I find really interesting, because do we want, you think about Jingle Bells, and I'm trying to think of when the last time anybody would have had sleigh bells would have had a sleigh, much less the bells attached. So I find, you realize there are probably references that are probably pre-World War I, and that might be pre-20th century.
You also, I have heard that chestnuts roasting on an open fire are actually disgusting unless they are dipped in butter, a lot of it.
Very possible. I have yet to have a chestnut.
Are we roasting chestnuts? Anyway, I'm just saying, I'm to your point, I do think there's some references that may or may not be applicable.
Well, I actually had this conversation with Robert Earl Keen earlier in the season, and we were talking about the fact that we both grew up in Houston, and that neither one of us had ever seen, he had never seen a chestnut, and certainly growing up in Houston didn't grow up with knowing what chestnuts were.
And yet we're roasting them on an open fire regularly around December.
Exactly right. So I don't know that I have ever had a roasted chestnut, so I have no idea how this works. I just know the song.
This is inspiring me, because I just feel like I'm going to write a whole album of just more applicable current Christmas references.
Well, the thing is, it seems like the questions that we're asking right now and some of the things that you're thinking about when you were writing these songs, those are things that are basically a thing that any sort of good songwriter would think about, right? The idea of, the subject matter is neutral. From my perspective, I always assume the subject matter is neutral, and that there are many horrible, horrible love songs in the world, and there are many remarkable love songs in the world. And so what makes a good love song is the writer, not the subject matter. And so my assumption is, where Christmas music is concerned, is that the skills that you bring to it as a writer are, and that make a song good, are the skills and the thought processes and the sort of the artistic desire to make a song, distinctive, those are all the same. Those are the same muscles, just applied to different subject matter.
Right. Applied to this genre that has, it's just so layered, with hundreds of years. So, I there are 5 original songs on Snow Globe, and I tried to, to take more than a minute, to take some hours and hash over the lyrics and the melodies to try to bring, bring something special.
That's great. Now I saw on your website that at one point you moved to New York to pursue a career in theater, correct?
Correct.
Right.
Yes.
Now, do you see a line between Christmas music and theater?
Ooh, another good question. That's interesting. So many of those songs that you're talking about come across like standards, and they are standards, some of them, which a lot of our jazz standards, or many of them, came from musicals. So that was the pop music of the time. So like the Christmas song that, you know, we were just talking about, that just lays out so beautifully like a standard. So it can feel very similar to old school musical theater if you're talking about the older Christmas genre.
Sure.
Very structured in that, some, you know, in that way, verse, chorus, maybe a bridge, probably not, you know, with a nice jazz trio. It just sounds like Christmas. So, yeah, I would put that right there with Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
You know, I'll tell you, but one of the other things I was thinking about is so many of those songs also have a fairly clear implied context. You know, they're not the... The singer often has somebody clear in mind that, sure, as a listener, you know they're talking to somebody.
Yeah.
Or there's somebody specific they're talking about. And frequently, certainly in the case of like a White Christmas, or, you know, that, you know, the emotional context is also very clear.
Yeah.
In a way that's not always the case with a pop song.
Sure. Yeah, it's I'm drawn to, and you'll hear that in Snow Globe, is the warmer, cozy side of Christmas tree decorating side of Christmas, and that does feel really intimate and personal, and like White Christmas and those sorts of songs, you definitely can feel that narrator speaking to you or one person. And yeah, just like a musical, it's that moment where they sort of, you know, here's my monologue, I'm gonna just turn to the audience and tell you how it is.
Right.
So yeah, I would say that's an interesting connection for sure.
So I want to go back to Snow Globe for a minute. This actually is not exactly one of those songs. This is a hymn, but it also is a beautiful version. So we'll come back and talk a little bit about this in a second, but this is your version of Silent Night.
My grandmother's favorite song.
Oh, that's sweet. How did she respond to that version? Or did she hear it?
Yeah, I mean, it's just a family favorite. Yes, with tears. And yeah, that one had to go on there for sure.
How did you decide to do it as sort of a honky-tonk version?
Yeah, it's a little blues country. I mean, I have some songs that have a little roots to them, you know, in my world. And if when I perform live, I have a couple that go there as well from other albums. And it just, for me, it felt right to go a little bluesier and, you know, than just a more straightforward ballad. I actually live in a neighborhood called Ballard, so that slipped out. Ballad format. So, yeah, that song, that's a little gem. That one got signed to a library, and hopefully for TV and film. So we're waiting to get that in a little program.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah. It's a little song.
What are the challenges in trying to take a standard or such a well-known song like Silent Night and figure out how to do a version that, you know, that is distinctive and that is clearly sort of your version?
You know, I feel like for this one, this one kind of happened naturally. I just sang it that way in a demo, sent it to my producer, and we kind of just kept rolling in that direction. And you know, you'll sit down and sort of, and map out the arrangement, and we did that together. And again, just sort of with the treatment with the guitars and that particular drummer, Eric Eagle, who's a producer over here as well, just sort of rode with it. We've got a pretty good roots, folk world up here. So that one, that came together. But like the little drummer boy on this record, I cannot claim the groove on that. That was his, and it's pretty darn cool.
Oh, that's great.
But I don't usually want to do a song that I don't think that would be either fun or that I love, you know. So I think that just having an emotional connection for sure is going to help.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, that makes sense. I've asked this question, and musicians usually sort of struggle for the answer, because in a lot of ways, I'm sure it's the case that in, you know, 80-90% of the time, the choices are so instinctive that asking somebody, how did you come to that choice, is really asking them to walk through thought processes that happen so quickly that they more often than not really can't do it. It's just,
sure,
you heard this, and whether it may be you heard yourself sing it and realize as soon as you sort of, you know, dropped something a certain way or phrased something a certain way, you realized, oh, that's country.
Yeah.
And everything else followed so quickly and so automatically that it's not really clear that for you to go back through and walk through, how did I get to this place, can often be probably a pretty tough chore.
Well, also, the opposite too sometimes is that the decision-making process or the way it ends up might have taken, you know, 6 months. So it's like, oh yeah, and then we decided, you know, some of these things just get scrapped, and then you'll end up, or it's a mistake or an instinct or something that happens in the studio and you're like, oh yeah, we're going to go that direction. That was cool. So, I mean, there is a little bit of fun. You can plan and plan, and then there's some fun magic too that can kind of develop.
Did you have a song that you thought was going to go one way, and for a long time you were planning to do it one way, and then when you were in the studio you finally realized either it doesn't work that way or it works this way way better?
Let's see. I think probably Auld Lang Syne on here is also super different than how I thought we were going to just go in. And I was like, oh yeah, let's put that on there. I really like that song. It's very, you know, it's positive and it'll be fun. And we ended up with a really cool, I think, sort of rendition. It's very upbeat and fun, and it takes a little bit of the melancholy out of it. And then I think also Last Christmas is on here, George Michael. Yeah. That just kind of turned out to be like a fun little jazz groove. So
that's, oh, that's great.
Different. Yeah.
I got to say, that song seems to be a very flexible. I've heard, I've got a good garage rock version of it, but I think it's a Montreal garage band. I have to say,
it's a solid pop song. I'm not going to lie.
Pardon?
It's a solid pop song.
Yeah. I have to say, though, it's the only thing I've always thought was one of my favorite versions actually has always been Taylor Swift's version. Because she was younger when she recorded it.
Mm-hmm.
And I found the, you know, sort of the emotional place rang truer for me.
Oh.
That I
get it. Like
18-year-old girl. Yeah. I found it very hard to buy entirely adults talking, saying like, this Christmas I gave you my heart, but you know, next time I'll give it to somebody better. Like, right. I had a feeling by the time you stopped playing with cootie catchers, you probably got past that way of thinking through your relationships.
Let's hope. Oh my gosh. I don't know. I think you're a very thoughtful lyric listener. So. That's amazing. Well, my show that I do every year, I actually play the original video, right. Wham video. Behind me, I have some video in this show, and I really recommend that all of your listeners pop that on, because it is a slice of a time and a place.
Yes.
It's a great video. It's when videos had full storylines, and it's pretty amazing. So.
So I know you said that you sort of start getting into sort of the business of Christmas by mid to late October.
Yeah. Well, this, my little snow globe show, I did it as a CD release, and then I was like, wow, that was really, it's a fun party. And, every year it's just sort of ramped up a little bit more. And this year, it is a Northwest Harvest, which is a beautiful, .org in, up here in the Pacific Northwest, raising money for people in need. And, it's become a benefit for them, and I have some nice, help on board now to make it even bigger. So with that being said, it's basically planned starting now, and also the promotion starts October 31st. And I don't know how I feel about that. And I always feel bad for Thanksgiving now, because I feel like Thanksgiving is getting a little bit less airplay. I feel like we're kind of switching from summer to Christmas these days.
Well, I think when someone writes a Thanksgiving song, or enough Thanksgiving songs to hold their space on the radio, I'll feel worse for Thanksgiving. Right now,
it's on.
Yeah, exactly. Are there people who, for whom, like, Christmas is when they see you? I know I talked to Robert Earl Keen about this, and that he also does, he has a whole Christmas show that has sort of evolved as a function of Merry Christmas from the family.
I thought you meant year round, like if they run into me on the street, they think of Christmas immediately. I should hope not that. No, I don't think I mean Christmas to everyone year round, but I think what you mean is, what do you mean?
Well, no, what I was thinking is that in his case, he was saying that there are people who, when they go to see him live during Christmas time.
Oh, that's their
connection. That's their time. That's their connection. And that very, very clearly that, his Christmas material is important to their interest in him. And so those are the shows they go to find, even though he's playing the rest of the year, and we'll go through their town once or twice more times, but over the course of a year. And I wondered if, you've had a similar phenomenon, that Christmas music has become an important part of how people connect to you or think of you as an artist.
Perhaps. I think that is developing still. The music that I'm working on right now is really different than Snow Globe. And so I think there's room for different sorts of audiences as a writer. But I think I do have people who already have it mapped out in their calendar. And it's a really, for some people, Christmas is a really special time of year. I think it's a beautiful thing to share music at that time. So, and this particular show, I do like to create it's almost like your Christmas party that you didn't have to throw. So it's super fun. We have an ugly sweater contest and just fun stuff. I think that's a fun event in that it's a great cheerful way to come together. But as far as connecting to me as the Christmas songwriter or performer, I think that's still playing out. We'll see.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's an interesting, it's a, you know, it is actually, I have to say, it's one of the things I was thinking about is when I was thinking about talking with you is, you know, there are people for whom that's the case. And I always wonder sort of how you deal with that, that knowing that you've made, much like somebody who has one giant song and walks out on stage knowing every night they want to hear the song. And in your case, having people who, you know, whose, you know, primary connection to you or one of their connections to you is Christmas music.
Yeah.
And, you know, and kind of how you mentally sort that out, knowing that you have this body of work, that it's your creativity, it's your voice, but it's not 100% your vision.
Right.
And
right.
How you sort of as an artist deal with that knowledge that there are some people who are here because they really like that honky tonk Silent Night.
Well, I'm happy as an artist. I mean, yes, I grapple with that because this was sort of something that happened to me. You know, like I told you, I wrote a couple of original Christmas songs, and I really thought that, you know, I connected with them, and so I wanted to record them, and then didn't really expect that Snow Globe would take on the way it has for me. But I do, and knowing that I have, you know, gosh, 80% of the year I'm doing other things. And, to me it's equal, if not more important, but people hear it. That's a great challenge for me to have, because I still have a passion, you know, for writing and wanting that to happen. So I think it's a good thing overall that anyone, in a world where there's a lot of music and so much noise, that I could resonate with people with my music regardless, is really awesome.
Oh, that's great.
At the end of the day.
Yeah, I get that. So, all right, well, Kristen, I think we're in a good place. Thanks for coming on with me.
Oh, good. I'm going to go get some chestnuts.
Excellent.
Open fire.
Yeah, we're actually getting to the season where we can finally test drive this whole chestnuts thing.
We have them here, so maybe I'll send you some in the mail.
It's coming on Christmas. They're cutting down trees, putting up reindeer, and singing songs of joy.
Recently, I also talked to saxophone player Mars Williams, who contributed to Christmas music first as a sax player on The Waitress's Christmas Wrapping in 1982, and last year he recorded Volume 1, and this year Volume 2, of Mars Williams Presents an Eiler Christmas, an avant-garde mashup of Christmas music with the works of saxophone great Albert Eiler.
Oh, Tannenbaum, wie treu sind deine Blätter. Du grünst nicht nur zur Sommerszeit, nein, auch im Winter, wenn es schneit. Oh, Tannenbaum, oh, Tannenbaum, wie treu sind deine Blätter.
Can we start? Can you give me a quick explanation of the Eiler Christmas project that you're on?
Okay, I take if you're familiar with Albert Eiler, or if you're not familiar with Albert Eiler, he was avant-garde, innovative. Saxophone player from that made his mark in the 60s, died in, oh, I don't know, early, like 1970 maybe. But his music was, he influenced a lot of people, influenced John Coltrane actually, when John Coltrane started going into the more extreme avant-garde parts of his later life. His music was very spiritual, based on gospel tonalities, off of hymns, off of Scandinavian folk themes, children's nursery rhymes, marches, things like that. And he'd play these beautiful themes and then stretch out into the stratosphere with just free avant-garde, free jazz blowing. So that's a little that's Albert Eiler in a nutshell. So, but anyway, if you are familiar with his music, you'll understand that what I within his music, sometimes when I'd listen to it, I'd hear these different themes when I'd be playing them, and almost like Christmas songs, you know, the same sort of chord structure and melodies. So I had this group called Witches and Devils, which is also the title of an Albert Eiler record, an ESP Records, I believe. And I would take that group, which did exclusively just Albert Eiler music. It was like a, you know, just cover songs. And it was a tribute band, pretty much. And we started playing, and one year I thought, you know what, I'm going to try mashing up Albert Eiler songs with Christmas songs. So I used the Witches and Devils group, and this was maybe the first time we did it was 2008, and it worked. You know, I thought it was really a lot of fun. And then I started structuring a little bit more and writing more music and arrangements for combining Albert Eiler's music with Christmas songs in the style of Albert Eiler. And this has gone on now for give or take 10 years. And over the last, so I put out a CD last year, Mars Williams Presents an Eiler Christmas, or Eiler, whichever way you want to pronounce it. That's A-Y-L-E-R. And I decided to try doing... well, actually, 3 years ago, I decided to see what this music would sound like with other musicians besides the Witches and Devils group that I have. So I've been going to New Orleans often and doing a lot of collaborations with New Orleans musicians. And I decided to give it a try with New Orleans musicians. So I took the music and the arrangements and went down there, and we played a concert with it was Helen Gillet, Rob Cambry. At the time, I think it was James Singleton on bass, Paul Thibodeau on drums, and Jeff Albert on trombone. So we performed it, and it was amazing because it worked. It was different than the Chicago one, similar in the ways the arrangements went, but I have it structured so that it can go in a lot of different directions that I can just bring it back whenever I want. There's a lot of free improvisation within these themes, which is how Albert Eiler's music was. So from there, because that worked so well, I decided last year to do a tour of other cities in the United States and in Europe, which I do a lot of collaborations with in different cities with a lot of improvisers worldwide. So I brought it to a bunch of different cities, and it worked out really well. You know, so like Vienna, Amsterdam, to name a couple. From those recordings, I put together Mars Williams Presents an Eiler Christmas Volume 2 this year, which is a co-release on my label, Soul What Records, and Albert Eiler, the label that put out a lot of Albert Eiler's early music, which is ESP Disc. And we did a co-release, and the music features some of the music from Witches and Devils recordings from last year, and also recordings from the Vienna group that I did last year.
So when you were composing this material, what's the challenge of partly sort of composing in someone else's voice and figuring out how to integrate both, you know, in this case, Eiler compositions with Christmas compositions?
Well, it's mostly, I wouldn't call it composing, first of all, because the compositions would be the themes. So for instance, but I'd say that I'm doing most arranging.
Okay.
So the way that I'll know, like, I'll say, okay, the, for instance, in Albert Eiler tune, Spirits. So at the beginning of Spirits, the way he would structure his music, it would start off with this more rubato, spiritual, ballady theme. And, you know, the background over the, under his theme is all pretty free with just droney tonalities and things like that. And then it would go into this march type of feel of another theme that would start slower and speed up and speed up and speed up until it broke up completely into the free. So you couldn't play fast enough, and then it just would just break up and go into the free. Then it would go into some improvisation. So what I would do is I go, let's take the drony part of the beginning of that piece of Albert Eiler's, and let's put a Christmas song like that would, in my mind, what I heard was O Tannenbaum, and play it in the style that he played the beginning of Spirits. So we would interpret O Tannenbaum. These are the directions I give the musicians,
right. Actually.
So we interpret O Tannenbaum in the style that Albert Eiler would play the beginning of Spirits. And then it would go, then from there, I'd go into Albert Eiler's theme of that march theme. And we play, and it goes into solos. And then during that solo, I introduce the theme to the 12 Days of Christmas. And what I liked about the 12 Days of Christmas is that it goes into the repetitious parts of which Eiler's music had a lot of repetition like that too. So I would take, it's hard to describe this to answer your question, but I think I'm doing it right.
Sure, no.
So then I'd introduce that, and then the musicians, the directions that I have on this map that I draw out is, okay, when you hear me start introducing the theme, you start quoting the themes too. So it's kind of loose and free, and I have it to where, okay, if you come in and join me, you could play the theme with me or play against me and answer it. So it can get really free. It can be a round type of thing or music. And then we come together and it's like, you know, it gets free and free. And then I do a cue and we all come together like on five golden rings. And then it gets tight again. And then it goes into solo.
Right.
And then bring back the theme again. Which is, that's, you know, if you're familiar with Eiler's music, a lot of his things were like that. He'd have a theme and he'd play a theme and it would go off into free playing and solos. And then somebody would introduce the theme again and everybody would kind of join into that theme gradually until it's together again. And then it would fall apart again. So, but I try to do these Christmas songs in his style. Thank you. know, I played, you know, the Waitress's Christmas song?
Yes.
The Christmas rapping?
I interviewed Chris Butler for this. I interviewed Chris Butler 2 weeks ago.
Oh.
What do you remember about that, about doing it?
I remember us getting together. Actually, I think, if I'm remembering correctly, because it was a long time ago, this was like 1980 or something like that, or 81. I remember that we were recording Square Pegs for the Square Pegs theme song for the television show. Jessica Parker.
Right.
And Jamie Gertz. And after we recorded that, we were in the studio, and Chris had mentioned that Z Records wanted to do this Christmas song, and he had this idea for doing the song. So we did it within that session, or at least we started coming together with it. I don't know if we actually started recording it then. We might have put down the basics, or we might have put together the song, though, at that session. At least I think that that's when we did it. But I remember then going in and putting my parts down at Electric Lady Studios in New York City. So this might have started in Los Angeles during the Square Peg session and coming up with the arrangement of it. And then I know my recording went down at Electric Lady Studios in New York. And I remember doing... I remember doing that, coming up with the horn parts on it. And then I brought in the trumpet player from this group, the Swollen Monkeys, that I was in at the time, Dave Buck, who unfortunately isn't with us anymore from a motorcycle crash. But he, I wanted to have the trumpet on there. I was hearing like more fanfare-y Christmas kind of thing. So we played the horn line. And then at the end, we wanted it to get loose and get, you know, a little more happy and exciting. So we started just soloing over the thing. And then I said, let's do like a Dixieland feel. So we came out of it at the end and we started improvising, doing a little Dixieland blowing at the end. And that's what I remember of it. So, but on this record, the Eiler Christmas Volume 2 that I just put together, I actually... You know, I would do this thing, and some people would go, how come you don't do the Christmas, the Waitress's Christmas rapping, you know? So this year I did.
Yeah.
And I do this Albert Eiler mashup of one of his tunes called Love Cry, and I do Christmas rapping in the style of Eiler's Love Cry.
What did it take? When you're thinking about how to sort of make Christmas rapping move toward Eiler? Again, what did you think that mm-hmm. needed to be influenced, what needed to be emphasized, or what did you, how did that process work?
Well,
you think about how to work with that.
Well, in Eiler's Love Cry theme is, it's just this one little, little melody, like the beginning of it. It's this little, it's just like two notes, actually, a two-note little theme. And it's like he does this question-answer thing. So it's like, so all of a sudden I was hearing, okay, you do the Christmas rapping thing, which is repetitive. Right? So I thought, okay, let's do... Like Albert Eiler's theme is and then while I'm holding the note, the trumpet player is then playing it. So it's like a round. So it's like, you know, answering me, like echoing. And that's how, so it's like in that style. And then it just goes, I start introducing the other parts of the tune, and then we come together in the march kind of style. You know, it's different every night when we do it live. And I keep that one pretty loose. So I'll start introducing the theme. It might come together in an Eiler march kind of feel when it goes into the, the instrumental break in Christmas rapping. So we'll do that and then speed it up until it falls apart, like Isla would do.
I think I was thinking about was the question is sort of the bigger question in this, in the Isla project, is how do you think of Christmas music? Do you think of Christmas music simply as a composition and as a musical experience, or are you thinking of it as a having additional meaning of some kind?
I think it's a joyous music. It's a spiritual music. It's a hymn type of thing, you know. So there's praise in it, but there's also joy and celebration. And I try to bring that all out into it, because that's what Christmas music is to me.
My thanks to Kristen Chambers and Mars Williams. You can stay up to date with both of them on Facebook. Mars is playing an Isla Christmas with musical friends around the country between now and Christmas. Our theme song is Dawn of the Cosmos by Ask Again. You can find me on Facebook at 12 Songs of Christmas. Stop by and say hi. Or go to Apple Podcast and leave a review to help others find 12 Songs. You can also see my brand new website for all things Christmas musicy at 12songsofchristmas.com, 12 spelled out. It's a work in process, but I'm pretty happy with it. See you there, and see you next week.